This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to a special Saturday edition of Coffeehouse Shots. I'm James Seif and I'm joined by Javier Blas, the Chief Energy Reporter at Bloomberg News and the co-author of The World for Sale, and Fraser Nelson, the editor of The Spectator. Javier, if I could start with you, how long do you think energy prices are going to remain elevated?
We are going to see high energy prices and particularly high gas and electricity prices probably through the whole winter and into the spring. This is not a short-term spike on prices. We are here for a crisis that is going to be with us potentially until February. It will be then when we will know that we have made it through most of the winter with enough gas, when prices, if the winter has been mild, when prices could come down. If the winter has been a harsh one and has been cold, it will take a few more months of high prices to things to really calm down.
And what's your sense on how much industrial production is going to end up effectively shutting down, either because it becomes uneconomic at these prices or because, in a more dramatic scenario, government essentially tells factories to shut to ensure that there's enough energy left for household heating?
Hopefully it's going to be mostly the first reason, that it's going to be uneconomical because prices are high enough to bring a demand reaction. We are seeing already quite a significant amount of big industrial consumers having to shut down or reduce production. Those are very energy intensive ones. We are beginning to see also substitution of electricity for oil, like, for example, on freight, on railways, where some freighters are putting the locomotives, the electric locomotives, back into storage and using the old-fashioned diesel ones. What happens on the electricity market is that people effectively are insured for a while because everyone fixes the prices for a few months. Consumers at households is for as long as a year, even more. A lot of business people hedge forward 1 or 2 years. So I think that what we are beginning to see now is the impact of rising prices for about a month or 50 days ago. When we are going into late November, early December, we'll see the big impact on prices. And then is when I think that we're going to see more companies having to reduce production because the price is unaffordable. But I think that we are only beginning to see the beginning of the crisis.
Fraser, we're only beginning to see the beginning of a crisis, Javier says. What do you think the government is going to do? Is this going to be a kind of response akin to the response that you saw to COVID, with the government stepping in, throwing money at the problem?
I think the government certainly is going to bail out companies who are in trouble. That's what we've seen already. We saw this, first of all, with the bailout of that carbon dioxide plant. And that was quite significant because if it had gone bust, the biggest customers were supermarkets. But supermarkets together, if they were going to be badly hit by the collapse of a carbon dioxide plant, they could have got together and saved it and done something. But no, the British government steps in with taxpayers' money. Now this sets a precedent that there is going that the sort of the furlough principle, that the government will be in there extending corporate safety to companies that get hit by shortages, that's going to extend through this energy crisis. We then had the interesting debate this week between Kwasi Kwarteng and Rishi Sunak about whether energy companies again should be given support and bailouts by the government. Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, was obviously, this was all behind the scenes, but the Chancellor was thinking, no, but why should we do this? Where would it stop? If we bail out these companies, then what's to stop us bailing out other companies hit by energy shortages? But Number 10 seems to have intervened in favour of Kwasi Kwarteng, the business secretary, saying yes, Big Brother will step in and help. So this is going to be quite interesting because already, as you said in your Times column, James, that we can see there is no restraint on the amount that businesses are paying for energy. There is a price cap on what consumers are paying, but right now, and businesses can be charged whatever they want. You are now seeing businesses facing really quite increased energy costs. For example, the company which prints The Spectator, they have told us that they are facing massive energy costs, and as a result, our costs to them are going to go up hugely, absolutely hugely, next year. That's a straight energy related price pressure on the Spectator, leaving us in the very difficult position, do we pass this on to the readers and increase the price or not? Now, you're going to get so many of these things coming through. Now, in the case of us, we can afford it one way or another. It's not going to make us bust. But there will be other companies, energy-intensive ones, where either the consumers will not be able to pay the extra cost of energy, or you're going to get some other cash flow issues, and those companies will be placed on the brink. Then the government is placed with a dilemma. Where does it stop? Who does it bail out? Who does it not? Because there's going to be lots of other companies pushed to the brink of and perhaps beyond the degree of profitability when these energy price increases are passed directly onto the businesses.
So, Javier, we've seen, I think, by well, certainly as of this morning, we've seen 13 household energy suppliers in the UK go bust in the last 8 weeks. How many more do you think are vulnerable? You talk to people in government, they seem to think that we are nowhere near the end of this cycle because they think there are the price cap, essentially, which they are not going to remove because they want to protect consumers, but this price cap is going to drive a whole bunch more of these household energy suppliers out of business.
Probably there are at least another 10 that they are in trouble. Whether they are going to make it through the whole winter or not is an open question, and it's very hotly debated within the industry. But you see that others are in financial difficulties. We see the names of other retailers who are failing to pay certain fees that they need to pay. So Ofgem is already asking them, what is your financial situation, when Ofgem, the regulator, see that someone is behind some compulsory payments to the regulator. Obviously, that has a red flag that there is trouble. So I would not be surprised if we see another 10 going down over the next 4 to 10 weeks before Christmas, for sure.
And do you think, at the moment, the government is getting the bigger energy companies are prepared to pick up these customers, even though they are initially loss-making, because they think that they will retain them for long enough to make money. Do you think that that will carry on, or do you think at some point the government is going to have to offer inducements to these larger energy companies to take on these new loss-making customers?
Well, one important thing is one way or the other, we are going to bail out the system, whether it's going to be through government intervention and taxpayer money directly, or it's going to be through mutualization and our rates will go higher up when the next cap revision comes next year. But this is not a free lunch, and someone is going to have to pay this. For now, the system is working and the government has avoided having to make intervention. But as more and more customers need to be transferred from a failed retailer to a new one, it's becoming more difficult. And if this continues, and I think it's going to continue at some point, probably the government is going to have to offer some support, probably through loans rather than grants. But at the end of the day, when next year, next February, the new price cap is announced, we are going to have to pay for all of this, whether it is taxpayer money and then the government will find a way to tax us more, or it's going to be through a higher cap. That's coming. And for next year price cap, we should not be surprised to be thinking about increases in the order of magnitude of 30 to 40%.
And Fraser, we know that an increase of, so economists calculate that an increase of 20% is a kind of 0.3% on the household energy cap. It's a kind of 0.3% on inflation. How much inflationary pressure are these elevated energy prices going to put into the UK economy?
Well, that's a big question, and it won't be very long before we find out. Of course, it will be, you know, January. That's when people tend to pay their fuel bills. But the inflationary pressure we can see immediately. The big question is whether it's going to be a brief spike. You know, I think the Prime Minister a couple of weeks ago said it was equivalent to a surge in electricity when you put on your kettle to make a cup of coffee. That was the analogy he was using there, is something that's going to be over quite quickly. If this isn't over quickly, then we can look at inflation off, you know, already we're looking at sort of 4% inflation by the end of this year. That's twice the target. By some estimates, it could be 5 or 6%. So it is, right now, is the question you ask me is very difficult to answer, which is unusual, because normally I could give you the simple answer. Inflation isn't happening. Inflation's very low. Inflation's going to stay below 2%. That's been the case for years and years. But now we're into very new territory where it's a brave man who would really make with any confidence a prediction about where inflation's going to be at the end of the year, even where inflation's going to be in Easter next year, or how long this inflationary spike, if you want to call it a spike, is going to last. It's been a long, long time since we've seen prices rise like this in this country. And the economy, and we don't, even now, it's very, very difficult to disentangle what could be short-term issues about, you know, about supplies getting clogged up, whether this is a temporary reaction of the economy reawakening after the COVID lockdowns, and whether, as with the petrol shortages, is going to be resolved quite quickly, or whether this is something more systemic and longer lasting. If it's the latter, this opens all sorts of headaches that the government simply hasn't prepared for. The government is betting the shop, really, on there being low interest rates for a long, long time. If those rates start to rise, then a lot of the public finances start to become undone. So we're into the territory, I would say, of unpredictable inflation. That's new for us, and it's quite significant.
I mean, the IEA report out this week seems to suggest that the world is essentially falling between two stools on energy. It has massively reduced investment in hydrocarbons, but it isn't investing enough in renewables. If that analysis is correct, would we be right in thinking that that means that we are in for a prolonged period where energy is short, in short supply, and prices are elevated? Is that what we are looking at?
Yes, I think that you are right. I think that we are heading to a period of higher energy prices across the board, not just for electricity, but also for gas, oil, and even coal. And the picture that the International Energy Agency, which is an advisory body for industrial governments like the UK, Germany, Japan, the US, the analysis that they presented earlier this week was a bleak one. On one hand, they said that the world is not investing enough in green energy like wind and solar to solve climate change. But at the same time, the demand trajectory, the current demand trajectory, is for more oil and gas and coal to extend. And we are not investing enough for meeting that demand either. So we are failing in both fronts. Interestingly to me, what was a bit surprising, it was how little the International Energy Agency spoke about nuclear. And nuclear as a potential source of resolving both your problems of climate change and your reliance on fossil fuel. And that's because the International Energy Agency is hugely influenced by a number of European governments that see nuclear as not the solution, like the German government.
Yeah, if you look at what's happening now and, you know, the reduction, Russia not choosing to pump more gas to Europe, it does make the German government's decision to basically close down Germany's nuclear program after Fukushima look even more of a strategic error than it seemed at the time. We've concentrated a lot in this podcast on the UK for obvious reasons. But when you look globally, where do you see this energy crunch being most dramatic, and where do you think it's going to have the biggest effect on economic growth?
Well, I very concerned about what's happening in China and India, both emerging countries and both extremely short of energy. And I'm concerned for two reasons, because they are economic engines of the world, and you need that they are doing okay for the world economy to function. But also I'm worried because the only response that both China and India can implement on the short term to resolve their energy problems is more reliance on coal. And that is going to be more problems for climate change. So that's one. If we are thinking closer to home in Europe, the big problem is going to be in some areas of Eastern Europe and the Balkans, where we are seeing huge economic pressure in countries that are politically very unstable and source of big European problems in the past, like Albania, Kosovo, Serbia, Moldova. Those places, if we think about the United Kingdom suffering problems because a few factories are shutting down, in those countries, huge companies, absolutely essential for their economies, are having to shut down. And worse, they simply are saying that they don't know when they will reopen.
Fraser, energy is always geopolitical. What do you think the ultimate geopolitical consequences of this current crunch and, as Javier says, this new era of higher prices that we are moving into will be?
Well, the first consequence will be more power for Vladimir Putin. Nord Stream 2 is weeks away from coming on stream. So right now, Putin will be able to use the withholding gas as an incentive for the Germans to give him approval. He wants it quite quickly. And then to see what other kind of deals he can cut. So you end up with pipeline politics playing very much into the hands of Russia. This is exactly why Putin invested in Nord Stream 2. He was able able to come up with a device, which the European Parliament was all against it, passing a declaration saying, no, we shouldn't do Nord Stream 2. Eastern European countries are dead against it too, thinking it will help Putin undermine Ukraine. But it turns out that Germany and quite a lot of the countries want the gas and are prepared to basically break European cohesion in order to get it. So this plays very much into Putin's hands, and I think he's going to go from a period where, you know, when energy prices were low and gas was abundant, this was a bad time for Russia diplomatically. Now this is a far better time. Now, looking over to China, I mean, China is not abundant in gas. China's had factories that have been working four-day weeks for quite a few weeks. And in many ways, China's been worse hit than Britain. Although, interestingly, we saw some China export figures a few days ago, and they were suggesting that the Chinese exports haven't been hit by this. China's still doing incredibly well. But China has also got a mandate set out to buy up the liquid natural gas boats. Basically, pay top dollar, pay whatever you need to get China its supplies. So if there's a price war for these things, then China is in a better position than Britain with its price caps. So it won't be long, by the way, until the EU will probably try to do something similar to China and try to do a price war. But that's kind of what you expect. But Britain is exposed. I mean, we, in 2017, we shut down our gas storage facility, thinking that we'd be able to use the docks instead. We'd be able to get the Qatari boats to come and supply a quarter of our gas. Now we're finding out that the security of supply is nowhere near as big as we thought. So this disadvantages Britain and it advantages Russia. And we'll have to see in the next few months how Putin's going to play the hand he's just been dealt. It's a very strong hand, and I think it will have quite significant political ramifications. I'm not quite sure it will create a greater Russia. That's some of the phrase I hear used now. Is Putin going to build up a sphere of energy influence that will create, effectively, a kind of a Russian energy hinterland that will include Germany and other countries? I'm not sure I'd quite go that far, but Putin does have a lot more power.
Fraser, Javier, thank you so much. An absolutely fascinating discussion. And thank you for listening.